Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, environmental, and legal arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI staff, management, board of directors, Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or sponsors. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart. Amy Bell is out sick, and this will be her third week out. And Ebony is off today, and I had to call on Mike Murphy to engineer for us today, and we may even invite him to join in the conversation. Who knows? Today as a guest, we have Nikki Crawford, whose website is yourpeacefulspace.com. But first, I want to go back to our opening intro. As some of us are very distressed over what may become in the future with our new president-elect, I have invited as a guest next week Sansara Taylor. And if you reflect back to our opening intro, which has been our theme for many, many years now, Amy has said it's a wee bit tame, perhaps. And I want to begin by reading what I read off Sansara's letter today. Women are not bitches, hoes, punching bags, sex objects, or breeding machines.
Women are full human beings, capable of participating fully and equally in every realm of human society together with men. We must fight for a world in which women are treated as such with every fiber of our being.
Now, I really do like that statement. And maybe we can adopt something in between our theme and this theme. But this is going to give you a flavor of what our conversation with Sansara will be about like next week. She has a website called StopPatriarchy.org. And we've had her on as a guest before. And she's a flaming activist. Now, after we talk today with Nikki about Your Peaceful Space, we hope to get Mike Cadell and Ann Pritchett to talk about the state of Kansas. So anyway, just to give you a heads up on what our show is today, and now we've got Nikki, this is her first time on the radio.
Yes.
And I assured her that everyone who's ever been on our show feels very comfortable and has a very good time afterward. We may take phone calls if anyone would like to call in. But when I saw Nikki's email to the station, I thought, oh my gosh, this is an issue I've been having for a long, long time. I hear how good it is to clear the clutter out of your life, but I have issues with trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that, Nikki?
There are lots of ways to do that. And I just want to reflect back on the opening statement about women is that women are often my best customers. They're the ones who really struggle with this. There's even research that supports their women release cortisol in their bodies when they are in environments that feel too overwhelming to them. So, you know, cortisol is a stress hormone, and it's a great thing to have pulsing through your veins if you're being chased by a bear, but not if you're standing in the doorway of your guest room. And so women seem to be particularly sensitive to their surroundings and the clutter that sits.
So women come to you for help.
Mm-hmm.
What brings them to you exactly? What do they tell you? What was the final straw for them to say, I've got to deal with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. Often the women I work with are women who are in some kind of life transition. So a woman I'm working with in Los Angeles right now just took early retirement. And after years in the financial world, she's now facing her house. And, you know, not having much time at home during her career, now she's seeing all of these things that are really, that have been wearing on her all these years, but now she has the energy to deal with it. So women who have been recently divorced or job changes, empty house, you know, empty nest, kids are gone off to college. So often that's who ends up saying, this is my time this is it.
Do they ever tell you that the bag lady syndrome has kept them from releasing things in their life?
Yes. Yes. In fact, I just had a call with a woman yesterday who really described the years of accumulation in her house of just feeling like she could not let go of those things, even though she had plenty. There was something, maybe fear at the bottom of thinking, just thinking about letting go of it. She felt afraid. And so she has just almost literally painted herself into a corner in her own home with stuff.
My situation's not quite that bad. I do have clear walking through my home.
Good.
I do, however, have a basement that is very disorganized and full of clothes that I no longer wear,
mm-hmm.
and lots of accumulation, old pots and pans that I no longer use, and I keep thinking there's somebody out there that could use these to start
mm-hmm.
a home.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, I got rid of, we had a large trash pickup day, October 28th, in my homes association, and I had a friend's son help me haul books out of my basement because of my macular degeneration. I thought, well, there's no sense on hanging on to these books anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as I told you on the phone, in the next week or two, I'm going to be receiving technology in the form of sort of a eyeglass apparatus that's going to allow me to read books again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an example of turning loose of something and then the need for it, or not the need, but the ability to use it has come back in my life. That's one of the things. And there's the plaid skirt that I had from high school that mm-hmm. I got rid of, and then plaid pleated skirts came back in style.
Yes, yes. So, there's often fear at the bottom of not wanting to let go, that you might need it again. And when you think about that question that you pose to yourself, that you might need it again, you can almost always say yes to that. And so if you want to change the way your home feels for you, you may have to start asking yourself a different question, such as, what would be the worst thing that could happen if I let go of this plaid skirt?
I might want it back.
Mm-hmm. So is it worth it to you to have the opening, the space, the less clutter, and take that small bit of risk that the plaid skirt that was popular in the styles in the 70s is going to be the same style and it's going to fit you like it did then? So for many of us, it doesn't. You know, it's never quite the same. And so changing your question that you ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen if I let go of this?
And just so many things, you know, with the computer technology. I recently just got rid of tubs of wires, and
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, who could use these? And finally, a friend took them to Springfield and thought that there might be a place down there that would have a recycle use for them. But literally, probably three tubs of connections and computer gizmos that
mm-hmm.
I had no use for, had no idea what they were.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they looked valuable to me.
Yeah, and I think I love the idea of recycling it. Anytime we can keep these things out of the landfill, of course, that's the goal. So if you're not using it anymore, knowing that there are other places that can use those things makes it easier for you to let go of them. So if really Google is a great way to find who recycles electronics, or where can I donate my old laptop, they can repurpose it and use it. You know, someone can buy it. So, yeah, always thinking about that and checking the stores where you take your used items to find out, do they have a zero landfill policy? Many of the thrift stores around town actually do. So even if it's clothes that can't be used anymore, can't be worn, they recycle that fabric and use it for stuffing and other things. So educating yourself a little bit on where the next home for your stuff can be seems to make it easier for people to let go of the things then.
Oh, boy. And I know I think about it a lot. It bothers me a lot that I want to get rid of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I can't. And Anne is just joining us. Anne, do you know what we're talking about here? She's a little bit late. We'll get her in on this conversation about...
If I could just jump in real quick, there is a a website. I'm not sure whether it's sponsored by Bridging the Gap or Mid-America Regional Council, called recyclespot.org, that tells you where to, a great place to recycle lots of stuff.
Great.
We were talking, Ann, with Nikki Crawford. Her website is yourpeacefulspace.com.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
About how to clear the clutter out of our lives and how it's supposed to make us feel good when we do this.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
You have experience at this.
Well, last year for Christmas, I asked for a dumpster, and it was amazing. I have a much cleaner basement now. It was a great gift.
Yeah, so talk about how you felt differently.
Well, in my basement, it had gotten to the point, that's where my washer and dryer is, and it wasn't safe to walk around. Mm-hmm. So right away, I noticed that. But then also, you could find things.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the nicest things, I just cleaned out a drawer the other day, and one of the nicest things is the things you find that you didn't even remember that you owned. I found a pair of earrings that I loved, and I forgot that I even owned them, and that made the whole drawer cleaning experience worthwhile. Plus, it took me about 20 minutes, and I'd put it off for maybe a year.
That is such a good point.
Mm-hmm.
We spend so much energy avoiding the task.
Yes.
Right? And then once you do it, it's 20 minutes.
Yes, if that.
So you spent so much more time dreading it.
Oh, exactly.
Than actually doing it. So good for you for...
Very much so.
For just doing it. Good. Yeah.
And I was telling her, and I'm not even sure you know that I'm getting technology that's going to allow me to see just better than a normal person. It's something I wear over my head.
That's
like
wonderful.
A cyborg type thing. And
so we can call you Cyborg?
You can. And or Cy. I like Cy. And her son is the one who helped me haul the books out of my basement about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was saying I'll be able to read those books that I've just now gotten rid of. And that's an issue that scares me from cleaning the clutter. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'll need it. I'll be able to use it again. But she says that's always an issue.
And you think you're going to keep, because I know I finally got serious about 5 or 6 years ago about cleaning out my closet, and I really do every season. And if I haven't worn anything, I get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, I really thought, oh, I would miss it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't even think about it. Once it's gone, it's gone. And it's a wonderful feeling to open that closet and have room to hang things up and to find things.
Mm-hmm. And to know that anything you want to wear will fit, and it's in good shape. It's a good option.
And it's less likely to be wrinkled because the closet's not as cluttered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, closets are such a big deal for women, clothes closets. So many stories about, the stories I'm talking about are the stories we make up when we're standing in our closet looking through our clothes. And so not only are we trying to make choices about what we want to wear, what we really love, but those clothes that don't fit anymore, the way we beat ourselves up over those. So we see it hanging in the closet. Every morning we see that, I don't know, pair of jeans or a pair of slacks that don't fit anymore. And so every morning it's an opportunity to give ourselves a hard time.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. It just makes you feel bad when you see things that don't fit anymore because you've outgrown them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a tip around your clothes closet is, do not have anything in that closet that doesn't fit. Even if you're not ready to let go of it yet, tuck it away somewhere else. Don't face it every day. I think people, when I work with clients and talk to them at the end of the process, they are so amazed at how much energy they reclaim through this process. So the energy when they're beating themselves up over a pair of jeans or something that they haven't gotten the zipper fixed on, but it's been in their closet for 3 years. You know, they don't have to spend that energy, that negative energy against themselves anymore.
No.
They can use that energy to do whatever they want with it. So it's clutter is a real negative energy drain for people sometimes.
Oh boy, I'm just sitting here just having anxiety over it because I have an office space in my home that's just filled with stuff. I mean, drawers that I never use anything out of them, but yet I open them up and there's stuff in there. There's good stuff. And it's like scary to think about just getting rid of it. Mm. But what you're saying is just get rid of it. If you aren't using it, you don't need it.
Well, does that feel true to you?
Well, it sort of feels true, but it's still something that it's just so difficult to even think about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you have to move, because I know that once we started buying houses and settling in one place longer than a year or 18 months is when we really started gathering things. Mm-hmm. But I've often thought back when we were first married and in college, we got married pretty young. And we generally moved once a year, once every 18 months. And that would be a perfect opportunity to have to declutter. And we didn't have all the stuff then that we have now. I would say in some ways we were probably a little bit happier then than we are. Not that we're unhappy now, but I think the lack of clutter made a big difference back then. Because you knew you were forced to. And when you're in temporary housing that you don't own, you know, well, I can't start dragging all this other stuff in and... I'm a garage sale person myself. I'm really good at going to garage sales and filling the back of my car and taking stuff home and then never using it. So, and I think that's when I developed that habit. But now I need to. I've done better lately.
Good.
But yeah, it's when you know that you have a deadline. So this is what motivated me to finally clean out my closet was, you know, I used to do this once a year. When, you know, many years ago when I was young, I did this once a year because I had to. So I know I can do it.
But it's like I'm the negative person here. It's like I put good money into that piece of clothing.
I know.
I mean, I spent money on that. If I hadn't spent money on that, I could have invested it. But I bought this piece of clothing, so now it's like it owns me, sort of.
Yeah.
That's the problem. If anybody'd like to call in and offer some suggestions or get some tips, it's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. So your website is?
YourPeacefulSpace.com.
YourPeacefulSpace.com. Mm-hmm. And they can go there and find out how to get in contact with you.
Yes.
And you had some interesting tips on the website, too, as I recall, about how this was going to help you feel when you did this.
Yes. So as you're talking about your office and the desk drawers, your reporting right now, just thinking about it, is making you feel, did you say anxious?
Anxious,
right. So we know there's a big connection between our physical stuff and our emotional stuff. And so you can imagine that if you feel anxious in its presence, you might feel less anxious when it's not there. And that's what I find, that when people are able to make their way through it, then it's no longer overwhelming for them. And so some ways to start that process is to really start with the easiest thing you can imagine. So there's no prize for the, you know, cowboy up kind of mentality in this work. That is not helpful at all. So start with the easiest thing. Maybe it's the top of your desk that it would be easier to get that organized and let go of the things you don't need anymore. The other thing is to break down your sessions only about 25 minutes at a time. There's actually brain research on this that talks about our ability to really focus and stay present with a task. It's about 25 minutes. And then you give yourself a 10-minute break where you, you know, get up and you go do something completely different. Most of us can do just about anything for 25 minutes. But if you imagine you might want to spend all day tomorrow on your office, that might feel more overwhelming to you than imagining 25 minutes on your office. So chunking it, making it small, you know, reasonable sessions of working at stuff. That's another really, really helpful tip. The third one that comes in handy for many people that I work with and people I just talked to is having some sort of accountability partner, a friendly accountability partner. So if you have a friend that you could say, hey, Sunday afternoon from 2 to 2:25, I'm going to deal with my desk. So whatever I get done in 25 minutes is what I get done. But I'm going to text you at the end of it and let you know I did it. And especially if you put that in your calendar, you commit to it, it makes the process so much easier. You just have to get started.
I did get started a couple of weeks ago, and I filled a little tub and stuck it outside my office door.
Okay.
And that tub is still outside my office door. My cleaning lady did notice, and she did report to the woman who referred her to me in my neighborhood. I mean, they are two of my cheerleaders who wish me success in cleaning this up. But, oh my gosh, I have also thought about, okay, what about if I take some of my empty tubs and I tub this stuff up that's in my home office and maybe haul it to the garage for a while?
Well, that's one way to do it. Sometimes when we do this, it's a way of really avoiding dealing with it. So at some point, you're going to have to look at the papers, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying you haven't really faced it.
I've done that. And what happened to me was I had a husband who wanted to know why my box was in his garage. So then I almost created a second problem for myself by not just throwing it away.
Did you eventually just throw it away?
Yes. I mean,
yeah, see, that was my hope. It's like if you could, well, like they say, if you don't use something for 6 months or if you don't miss it, then it can go farther out the door, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is one strategy. So if that's paper that you haven't looked at in 6 months now, there's really no reason to keep it for another 6 months before you let go of it. But the best strategy is one that you'll do. So if that feels like a way in for you, then that's fine. That's reasonable.
You know, I've got a collection of books, like computer books and things. I don't even know. I haven't even reached up on that bookshelf.
The other day I noticed myself on a bookcase. I had some basic computing books that I bought probably 20 years ago, and I don't think the information in them. I was afraid to pull one of them off the shelf and look and see how outdated they were.
Yeah, that could be a solution, too. Yeah.
And there are bookstores in town that will buy your used books.
Yes.
You know, you don't make a fortune, but you also don't throw them away.
You get them out of your house.
Yes.
Is the benefit of that. I've done that myself. I didn't really care how much they gave me. I just knew I didn't have to deal with those books anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially technology-related things. That changes so quickly.
Yes. Cookbooks. The other day, I was looking in my kitchen, and I have a whole bookcase of cookbooks. When was the last time? Because when I want to know how to cook something, I Google it.
Mm-hmm.
So for about 2 weeks now, I've been trying to talk myself into getting rid of those cookbooks.
Because
when I think of the other things I could put up on that shelf that I might even look at and use. And then one of those cookbooks, of course, well, it was a wedding present. There's a note on the inside of it. But I'm going to have to get beyond that.
Yeah, the old Betty Crocker cookbook.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Is that what you have?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was.
And the joy of cooking that
how
was the standard for how long? I'm sure they probably have a website.
Google has replaced a lot, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really has. My mom and I were having that conversation about cookbooks, that she has just a beautiful collection of them. And I said I only have two because we get, you know, the New York Times has an app for recipes and you can find anything on there. And if it's not in there, it's somewhere else. So, yeah, it's definitely a changing landscape.
I don't suppose Mike is wanting to chime in here on anything. No, he's like, no, he's ignoring us.
He's an uncluttered person.
Yeah. And I want to say something that feels really important to me, that when we're thinking about letting go of our stuff and decluttering and, you know, noticing how it makes us feel when we're in the midst of the clutter, that the bigger point really is what's beyond the clutter. So are the things in your home keeping you from doing something else? The time and the energy that you spend worrying about your office or about your clothes, what would you rather be spending that time on? And that's something that I work with my clients on. That's one of the first things we talk about is what is it that you want to create instead of what you have? because the clutter is sort of one thing, but it's almost like it's the thing that's in the way of your next big move. And so the people I'm working with are often in transitions, and so it's a real that makes sense to them. You
like
know?
What would you use that office space for when it was finally uncluttered? I think that's maybe what we need to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
What's
well,
the
it,
outcome?
Still, it would still be my computer.
Yes, but think
room.
Of how much more interesting it would be for you to spend time in there if it was less cluttered.
But perhaps I could even clear out another little corner in my dining room that I now use for bill paying and what have you.
I've done that too. Set up another space because the original space.
Right. I could start paying the bills from my home office now instead of my dining room table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, thinking about what do you really gain? What can you create that you really want?
In my house, we could actually eat on the table if I bothered to clear the clutter off of it. So, 'cause it kind of becomes the gathering place for things that I don't know what else to do with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting that you say that. I will clear my table off, and in a heartbeat, it's the top of it's covered again. Do people have an issue with their tables?
Mm-hmm. Yes, dining room tables or kitchen tables are collecting spots. And that's often the case when you don't have a system set up. So mail is a big deal for a lot of people. They grab the mail out of the mailbox and throw it on the table. So they haven't designated any kind of system, really, to deal with the mail when it comes in the house, or papers from work, or kids' school papers. So creating a system that the top of your dining room table shouldn't be home for anything but eating. And so what kind of system can you create to deal with the papers that are there?
My mother had that rule that, you know, the kitchen counters were for kitchen things, mm-hmm. and the dining room table was for us to have dinner at. And so if we had a project, like as kids, we would do school projects on the dining room table. But we knew that when we were finished with that work time, we had to clean off that space because at the next mealtime, the family was going to be sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was not much of a neat freak, but that was just one of her rules.
Yeah, so it was a habit.
It was.
That you got into, and sometimes it's just as easy as that. It's being conscious about creating a particular habit and then following through with it most of the time. You know, you're not striving for perfection.
At work, I clean off my desk every day.
Mm-hmm.
And someone just the other day complimented me on my workspace. I'm like, you haven't seen my house. Mm-hmm. But it's just for years, it's a habit. I just, because when I walk in the morning, I like to look and see an empty space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some nice research about productivity and messy offices. So, yeah, you can regain 10% of your productivity. So, in a 40-hour week, you can buy yourself some hours.
Well, I don't spend that time cleaning off my desk. I can sit right down and get to work when I get to work. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, less distractions.
I leave a lot of work on my desk so that I'll know where I'm beginning the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then there are three of us in my office, and one of us is pretty well organized, and the other one is like, everything is. There's no pieces of paper laying around, and I don't know how he does it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are three of us, and we have three different totally styles. I'm the sort of cluttered desk top person.
Mm-hmm. And there really are people who feel like they're going to lose track of something if they can't see it easily. So there's,
or they'll forget.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they don't leave that paper right there, they'll forget that they have to put it in an envelope and mail it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll forget that they need to take care of whatever it's attached to.
Yeah, and there's other systems you can set up for yourself.
You can make lists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's so many apps.
Mm-hmm.
That you can add to your phone for list making. And I found one the other day for medications, which I thought was interesting, that you put in all the names of all the medications you take. So when you go to the doctor or wherever and they say, what medications are you on, you have a list right there and you can email it from your phone to whoever's asking you for it.
That's great.
I thought that was a great idea, yeah. Because I'm one who, the notepad on my phone is just full, and I go through it every once in a while and I find information on there that I don't remember what it means.
Mm.
And phone numbers, where I wrote down someone's phone number instead of putting it in the contacts tab. And I have this phone number, and I have no idea whose phone number it is, why it was so important for me to save it in that particular place. So But I'm forcing myself to be more organized. I got a new phone, and I used to have like 8 pages, home screen pages of apps, and now I'm down to 2. It feels good.
Yeah.
Life used to be less complicated than it is now, to tell you guys the truth.
Yeah.
I'm older than the two of you, and I can remember a much less stressful time when we didn't have all of the technology we have now, which is supposed to make our lives easier, but has it really?
In some ways, no, I agree. When you look at pictures of people in a social gathering and everyone's on their phone, it makes me kind of sad. I'm the first one to embrace having the technology. I love having, it's like having a library in my pocket. And I love that. You can look anything up at any time. But it also has done a number on our social interaction.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's harder for us to be present with people when we have our phones out.
Exactly.
Well, Nikki Crawford is our guest today, yourpeacefulspace.com. And Nikki, what led you to get into doing this?
Well, it's kind of been a long road getting here, but I think the earliest thing probably was growing up in a house where there was lots of stuff. It wasn't ever messy or dirty, but there were just a lot of things. My mother considers herself a collector of potentially useful things, which is lovely. And growing up with her and in our home, I got to be really good at organizing because there was just a lot of stuff all the time. And at some point, it occurred to me as an adult that you can't organize your way out of some of the stuff. You just have to let things go. I have always been in a profession where I've been of service. I have a PhD in special education and spent years in that field. And the things I learned about human behavior and coaching and teaching in that field really helped me with this work. But I think several years ago, I downsized from a big house in the suburbs into a 700-square-foot condominium. That was probably my biggest shift, where I let go of 80% of my things and realized it was an amazing experience and it was incredibly liberating. So all of that stuff kind of came together, and then I read the Marie Kondo book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which I would suggest if anyone is interested in this, you know, aren't ready for some one-on-one coaching, but she's got some great ideas in this book, and it's a fun book to read. So
I think Mike's trying to get a hold of our next guest, Mike Cadell. And to wrap up, Nikki Crawford helps people. How would you say, what is it you would say you do for people?
I help people declutter, organize, and simplify.
It sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. I'm sitting here dreaming of a clean drawer and under the bed. I think maybe I'll tackle that next.
Great.
Oh, I've never put stuff under my bed.
Oh, we're terrible at our house about that.
I guess I do have something to be thankful for. I don't have to clean out under my bed.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Nikki, for being on today and for being a friend of KKFI's. And maybe we'll have you back again soon if you'd like to come back.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you so much.
And thank you for the inspiring thoughts.
And coming up on the new year, I just thought it would be, it's one of those things people always set the goals to do something different the first of the year. So it seemed like a good time to have her on today. So thank you, Nikki.
Great. Thank you.
And we may have a few messages to play, and then I think we have Mike Cadell on the line.
How safe can a park built on top of a Superfund site be? John Garland Park in KCK is just such a site. We'll be looking into that at the next Eco Radio Show, Monday at 6 p.m.
Greg LeRoy on Trump's carrier deal and Kelly Hayes on No Dapple. On Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m.
This holiday, why not give a gift of cultural education to our youth in Kansas City? Come to an educational fundraiser called Tis the Season, sponsored by the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Heritage Center and Museum on Saturday, December the 17th at 6 o'clock p.m. Our website is brucewatkinscenter.com or call 816-513-0700. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, aftertheharvestkc.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Arts KC is Kansas City's regional arts council, working to unleash the power of the arts for the benefit of our community. Arts KC's programs support, promote, and advocate for the entire arts sector. Learn more at artskc.org. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Ready, Mike? Are you online with us?
Yes.
Hello, Mike?
Yes.
Mike Cadell. Tell us your website, Mike.
Well, it's Radio Free Kansas. If you know how to Google, and everybody knows how to Google, just Google Radio Free Kansas. I air 7 days a week, beginning at noon, every day, Central Time. And it's a call-in live talk show, Radio Free Kansas. And if you want to know what's going on with me on the web and everything, that would be the best way to do it, is listen in and read the information on the show. How are you doing, Sharon, and every woman?
We're doing good. We're doing good. Ed is here with us.
Hello, Ed. Mike.
Hi.
Ed Pritchett.
Long time no talk to.
Yes.
And, yeah, you know, we've spent a lot of time since the election bemoaning the fact that we have a president-elect Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Well. Even though I believe it's pretty evident that the election was tampered with, and it's just a sad state of affairs that we have to accept, and I'm not sure why we have to accept it. But anyway, it is what it is, and I don't know. What are we going to do?
Well, I don't know if you've been paying attention lately, Sharon, and well, I'm sure you do. Democracy Now! Airs every weekday at 8 in the morning on KKFI. And, you know, there's quite a few things moving around Inauguration Day, January 20th.
Uh-huh.
Is that Ann?
Yes.
Are you going to go, Ann, are you going to take some time off and go to D.C.?
I'm probably going to go to Topeka. I'm not going to go to D.C. I'll either go to Topeka or stay here in Kansas City. It's kind of a nice problem to have. There's a lot of options for that day.
Is there a rally?
Yes, there's one here at Liberty Memorial and then in Topeka at the Capitol.
And
I believe Jefferson City, too.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised to see one develop in Lawrence also.
Right.
I wonder what time. I can't remember what time it is, the rally at the Union Station Liberty Memorial in Kansas City, Missouri.
That's according to the Facebook event page. This is Mike Murphy. It's 10 a.m., which is kind of odd because the D.C. one is 1 p.m., which, of course, would be 12 our time. That's what, according to the Facebook event page, it's at 10 a.m.
Is that on Inauguration Day or the day after?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I got them in reverse. I'm sorry. It's at 1 p.m. at Liberty Memorial, 10 a.m. in D.C.
Is that on the 20th or the 21st?
Right.
21st.
And then when you pull up the event page for the big one in D.C., they have a whole list of all these Facebook event pages. They have it broken down by state. They have pretty much everything. So I'll pull up Kansas right now and... Well, apparently that page is not available, but I can see if there's anything else in Missouri as well. Sorry, you can go ahead.
But I think we can agree that that's part of the resistance that's going to be necessary as a visible opposition to what's going on. And I think the remarkable thing for me was hearing that there was over 300 cities that went out on the $15 minimum. There were actions in over 300 cities over the $15 minimum wage issue.
Kansas City is a leader in that movement. We should be very proud of the movement here in Kansas City. We were one of the first ones to start, and we have some of the largest rallies in the country.
Yes, I was promoting Judy Ansel's Heartland Labor Forum just last night on another radio program, and talking about how important Heartland Labor is on the KKFI schedule. So, and I know that Judy was involved in organizing that, and I was real impressed with the turnout here in Kansas, there in Kansas City, and how it coincided with the over 300 cities and towns that had similar actions. That's a very important thing. Then I heard also, for better or worse, on Sputnik Radio, Tom Hartman comes on every day on Sputnik Radio, which is an interesting show. Comes on 11 in the morning and runs till 2 in the afternoon. And he was had a guest on who was bringing who was an older guy, a migrant worker whose children were dreamers. Now, I think, Ann, you could probably tell us about what the dreamers are, but they're organizing some big stuff, too.
Yes, they are.
And who are the dreamers, Ann?
The dreamers are mainly students and young adults of Hispanic heritage. Many of them were born here, but quite a few of them were not, and this is the only home they've ever known. They don't have a legal documented status. In many states, they're not allowed to go to college and further their education. And once they get out of high school, they are kind of stuck in terms of being able to work because of their legal status. And the ones I know were all brought here as infants or young children. And like I said, it's the only home they've ever known. But because of their undocumented status, they're concerned about what's going to happen to them in terms of potential deportation. And they're asking to stay here.
If they're born here.
Right.
If
now
they're born
older,
here, they're citizens.
There was this older guy, his children. He was undocumented, but his children weren't, and they were in college. And he was telling me, and he was some sort of guy who was involved in the early days of organizing around something called DACA, D-A-C-A.
Yes.
I don't know what that is either, but he...
I don't know what it stands for, but it's the legislation that would allow them to stay.
Well, they're mobilizing for Inauguration Day, too. And he claims that the next step for them, and I don't know if many of our KKFI listeners remember the impact of May 1st, several years ago,
yes, I remember.
when they mobilized, you know, a lot of the yard workers, mm-hmm. the undocumented yard workers, the people who, you know, do the yards, do the nasty work, pick the fruit and the vegetables. When they all went out, it was a massive thing. Millions of people came out on that May Day.
It was one of the largest rallies I've ever seen here in Kansas City.
Well, they're claiming they're steering all their resources into this. Maybe not on Inauguration Day, but very soon thereafter. This is the beginning for them. This is the beginning of a very serious organizing effort. And I think it's one of the most important things that this confluence of different movements are going to be showing up today or showing up on Inauguration Day could very well be an important date in history for the resistance against President-elect Trump.
So DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Thank you.
I don't know. And the Black Lives Matter. There are so many movements now.
Mm-hmm.
The Native Americans in North Dakota, the confluence of all these Indian nations coming together. You know, I think there is more than adequate things for us to put up a strong. And, of course, we always have President-elect Trump and his foolish thumbs on Twitter. I mean, that's going to be one of the best things that's going to help us out. I think even many of the people who voted for him, I think, are having regrets. I know out here in deep red Kansas, Jefferson County, I've ran into people who even people who voted for him, who just laugh, you know, because they realize they really made a mistake, you know.
Well, just yesterday, the Republicans filed a bill to decimate Social Security. So I wonder if that's what they voted for.
Of course not. But, you know, the news is sort of a slow, the way people assimilate it out here. And I think it takes time, a 48, 72-hour period. That news comes out. It has to get around to people. A lot of people don't get on the Internet as much as activists, social activists do, and progressives. But it nevertheless sinks through. Right now, I've been sort of on my radio program, sort of bothered by the number of people who are going into the fake news meme. So I've been trying to help them understand where that comes from. But the thing I'm finding is that people, as a whole, are beginning to realize that the president-elect has got some serious problems. I think Vice President Pence or I call him Vice President Select Pence. Pence is, maybe Donald Trump's own worst enemy. I think there's a lot of possibility that we will have more problems from the Christian right, Republican Christian right, in the country than we will with Donald Trump. I mean, we're splitting hairs here politically, but. I don't know. It's a bit interesting thing. I'm really paying attention to the resistance movements that are growing around the country. I think that's where our best hope lies.
Mike, we've just been joined by Donna Wolf, host of Urban Connection, and she's just arrived in from, I want her to tell us a little bit about an award that
sure.
she just received for KKFI, if she would. And
I most certainly will. Thank you, Sharon.
Oh, good.
We at KKFI, Public Affairs Programmers, have just been awarded a Community Service Award by the Kansas City Association of Black Journalists. This award is for years of quality, accurate, and affirming programming and news stories about African Americans and other people of color. And this is what has earned KKFI this KCABJ Broadcast Community Service Award. And I was honored to be chosen by my cohorts here at KKFI to receive this award on all our behalves, all of us who work so very diligently and very hard to adhere to the mission of KKFI, which is to be a place where issues and information and people who don't generally get to be heard in mainstream media, you get to be heard here on KKFI. For me, we're like a 100,000-watt community megaphone, and we're here to shine a light on the issues and enlighten our audience. And be good stewards of our community. It's all of our responsibility to take care of each other and to guard the truth and to seek justice for everyone. And I think that KKFI is a shining example, maybe a lone and singular example in our area where that is the mission and that is the work that's carried out 24 hours a day here at 90.1 FM.
Good. Thank you, Donna.
Congratulations. That's wonderful news.
Thank you.
That's great.
Olivia Dorsey was there. Brian Busby was there. Louis Duguid. Betty Tate Beaver was there. Let's see. Who else can I think of that was there? It starts with a G. From the Urban League and also Gwen Grant. One of the moderators on the program Ruckus on KCPT was there. So it was just a great celebration of broadcasting, excellence in broadcasting. Of course, we've all had Louis Duguid Jr. here on KKFI as our guest on multiple programs down through the years, and he has been an icon and a beacon of hope for everybody that believes in truth and isn't afraid to say it. So very appreciative to receive that honorable award, that that award in our honor. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna, for telling that. I was all excited to hear about it, so I was glad to see you come in early.
Okay.
And tell us about it. And now if you want to stay and join Mike, Mike, do you want to talk about the state of Kansas?
Well, you know, we don't have a lawyer. I don't know if I'm qualified. There's not a lawyer in the Senate. Not one lawyer is in the Senate, the state Senate chamber. The state itself is, I'm a little upset with the alternatives people face ahead. I don't think we have the kind of leadership we need to do the things that are necessary to, as they say, right the ship. I campaigned advocating a tax on the 1%. I don't think many people, I know many people in Jefferson County are learning and that to be part of the 1% in Kansas, you have to make a threshold income of $358,000 a year. To be part of the 1% of the 1%, you have to have an income of over $1 million, and the average income of the 1% of the 1% is $7 million a year. The top income in the state of Kansas is over $25 million a year. There are 12,000 households in the state of Kansas that are in the 1%, making over $358,000 a year. There are 1,200 households in the state of Kansas that are making the 1% of the 1%, averaging $7 million a year. These people are paying the same tax as people making $40,000 a year.
Well, and in some cases,
the average
less.
Income in the state of Kansas is $48,000 a year. That's for 99% of the people. Now, that includes everybody. The dirty little secret is that I'm not getting from any leadership of any party right now in the state of Kansas is that for decades, the top income bracket was $250,000 a year. Tucked inside that $250,000 a year was this 1% for decades. So when Governor Sam Brownback decided to fold the top income bracket into the middle class income bracket, he gave these millionaires and billionaires huge, huge windfalls. That's the untold story that's going on of inequality in the state of Kansas.
Where do most of these wealthy people live, Mike? Did you get the info on that? Are they scattered around the state?
This is based on a statistical study done by the Economic Policy Institute in 2012. And it's based on census returns in 2010 and the IRS statistics provided in 2012 to 2014. The Economic Policy Institute is a much more, if you want to know who the 1% is, that's where you go to.
Right.
The Kansas Institute, or not the Kansas, the group, the Kansas Center for Economic Growth, uses a different statistical base. But I'm happy to say I have a Kansas City economist off the record, and all of them PhD economists who've advised me and guided me through my campaign for the 47th House District. Unsuccessful as it was, but it brought a lot of education to people about the economic inequality in the state of Kansas. And I think that is one of the most important issues that's facing Kansans, that's what has to be done in our state legislature. We've got to have some lawmakers who will stand up to Brownback, tell the people this truth, and do the taxes that need to be done on the 1%. That's really what must be done.
Mike, you said you ran on a platform of impeaching Brownback, increasing taxes on the 1%, and actually, I thought you're impressive. Did you get 30% of the vote?
31.5. In a county of 12,000 registered voters, I got 3,124 votes. Of course, this is a deeply Republican county. It has been for over 30 years. And I got over 3,000 votes, and strikingly enough, interestingly, and I attribute this to the Trump, the Trump tidal wave, over 4,000 did not vote. of the registered voters. And so I think I could have done a lot better. And I, one other thing I screwed up on, I did not have one yard sign in the whole county. Now, all you people know how whorish that is, pardon the word, yard signs are. My opponent had dozens and dozens and dozens of yard signs all over the county. He got Coke money. He got money. He was over financed by all the PACs, the PACs, the Republican Party, the Kansas State Republican Party could throw out money at him. He got directly money from Coke Industries, and he only got three donations from three people in the county that were on the public. Three donations from people in the county. I took only one institutional donation of $200. I'm proud to say it. It's from the United Steelworkers in Topeka. $200. Everyone else were individuals who gave me money. I ran as a Bernie candidate who inspired me to do it.
You know, the frightening thing is that is not an isolated situation. My understanding is that type of infiltration of local politics went on across the nation, with money being flooded to candidates who are willing to toe that party line that belongs to the Koch brothers. You mentioned statistics on the average income in Kansas, Mike. I thought that the national average income was about $56,000 a year. Is that correct?
And this is for the 99%, which includes everybody besides one. Mm-hmm. It's $48,600 some dollars.
Okay,
and
just for Kansas, though.
That's for Kansas. Only mm-hmm. Kansas. These are only Kansas statistics.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe there's 12,000 homes that make over $358,000 a year. It's hard to believe that there's 1,200 homes in the state of Kansas that make over an average of $7 million and then as high as $25 million a year.
And then,
go ahead.
And then when you throw all those incomes in and average it down, you've got to have some people making such small sums of money that it's just not even countable.
And people who don't have any money at all. I mean.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. That's what pulls it down to $48,000 a year is the extreme poverty in many parts of rural Kansas and in the urban cores. Really, what Brownback has done is, and I can only, I hope, the Secretary of Agriculture position as of yesterday was still open on Trump's transition team. And I hope people are arguing, I hope he leaves. I hope he stays, because I come from a small town. I, for better or worse, my parents spanked me, not a lot, but I got spanked. And I think Brownback and the Republican Party in Kansas needs a good old-fashioned spanking.
I agree.
Politically bad. And, I think the best way to do it is let Sam stay here and take his medicine. And look at these cowards that did not run. And my opponent ran. Can you believe this? My opponent went around the county and said he was a moderate. He never said he'd stand up to Brownback, but he said he was a moderate. He's for raising minimum wage. He said he went to the Democratic leadership here in the local county and told them, well, I'd be a Democrat if it wasn't for your position on abortion.
Yeah,
we have a lot of that.
Mike, we are out of time totally.
Okay, well,
we have to move over and let Donna take it with Urban Connection.
Thank you for having me on, Sharon, and Donna, and Murphy. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Yeah, he stepped out of the room, and Donna's at the board now. So we will talk to you soon, and
thanks
everybody for tuning in. And next week, our guest is Sansara Taylor with StopPatriarchy.org, and it should be a bang-up show.